Grade 2 Conference, Lecture 32, Saints, Part 4, and we're continuing our discussion concerning who were the saints. So we saw in the previous lecture that through the principle of spiritual economy, the hierarchies made copies of the higher bodies of Jesus and waited until humanity needed these bodies, and then they could be sent down, as it were, if we want to use a directional way of looking at it, so that certain individuals could incorporate them into their own being with very powerful, dramatic, and one might say to some extent evolutionary consequences and effects. Now, I spoke of those who were to receive etheric bodies of the Christ being and how this would affect their memory, their life forces, their appearance. In ways that over time, because the etheric body is slow, it takes 7 years, but since they were carrying the life body of a very lofty being, this made it possible for them to live longer, and those 7 year periods would wreak great changes. Now, the question might arise for some of you now, or it certainly will by the end of this lecture. Well, who gets these? How does the spiritual world decide who is developed enough to get it? Because you, Eugene, have said monks. Okay, that, you know, that's logical. They would undoubtedly be more spiritually developed than their peers. But you also said peasants. And I could also say townspeople, though towns were not that developed at the time. The growth of cities hadn't yet begun. And also members of the nobility. Yes, they too were to receive some of these. I've used the pronoun he quite a bit, but there are also she's as well. So how is this determined? What qualifies an individual by dint of what kind of development, let's say, in a previous lifetime? Are they going to be the ones to receive this? And Steiner says something very interesting here. He says that if this was happening in Asia, and it did not, so we don't have this kind of sainthood outside of Europe, but if it were to happen in the East, it would be completely based on the degree of spiritual development that that individual had attained in previous lives. We could think today of the way that the Dalai Lama, the new Dalai Lama, is found. There's a very conscious and specific way of searching for the individual who was a Dalai Lama in a previous life, and that's who you get. And Steiner says, in the West, it's not that way at all. Steiner, an initiate, could not tell you why one person was chosen and another was not, and it often had little or nothing to do with their actual stage of spiritual development. And in fact, the problem sometimes arose, and the saint stories deal with these sometimes a little bit sadly, even tragically, sometimes with a lot of humor, that one body of this individual was Christ infilled, and the other three bodies weren't at all. And you had a tremendous discrepancy in the character of this individual, because in many ways they were, you know, the same old peasant oaf that they had always been. On the other hand, they were speaking or acting in a way that belied tremendous wisdom and divine inspiration. And it's like that expression we have from the New Testament, the wind bloweth where it listeth. And wind can mean pneuma, which means spirit as well. and thou knowest not whence it cometh, nor whither it goeth. We don't know in the West. The West is a stranger, more mysterious place in the way the spiritual world interpenetrates the physical world, obviously, or we wouldn't be such a, we wouldn't be living in such a totally insane world right now. So anyway, who knows? And that's part of, for the children, the delightful quality of the stories of the saints. And by the way, I just say this, of course, I shouldn't have to say this at all, but I'm going to say it. What I'm telling you in this lecture and the one that came before is nothing that we share with the children. And I'll leave it up to you if you want to share it with their parents. It's pretty far out stuff. But I really do believe that for any Waldorf teacher who has even a passing acquaintance with anthroposophy, and I hope that's at least what you have, this is very important because these stories are very embattled and you will be under pressure in some schools, in many schools, eventually in most schools, not to tell stories of the saints. And it's important to know how incredibly central these figures are for the transition from the ancient world to the modern world. The saints were the only game in town in terms of having any connection to the spiritual world. Let's go on now to talk about those saints who were vouchsafed to be given astral bodies, or at least one at a time, an astral body of Jesus. What would they be like? So now let's think of characteristics of the astral body. As we saw in the stories of the fables, the astral body is the body that we share with the animal world. So saints like this would probably have a greater kinship with, a deeper connection with, the animal world. And of course, I'm sure several saints will come to mind, Saint Francis probably preeminently, but there are quite a few saints who are not working so much in the realm of gardening and growing herbs or working with, food, but rather dealing with animals, often taming animals or helping animals in one way or another. And they are saints who could talk to the animals. That's very often something they have in common. Well, I can talk to animals too. I talk to my dog a lot. He rarely listens to me, but I talk to him. They also got listened to. So it's not only that they can talk to the animals, they understand the speech of the animals, and the animals will relate to that. So that's one characteristic that shows you here very likely is an astral body of Jesus of Nazareth rather than an etheric body. What else does the astral body do? It also governs our social life. It makes us more extroverted, more introverted, more tending towards being comfortable socially or being shy or whatever. So we would expect these would be individuals who could model healthy social relationships and would probably more often than individuals who receive the etheric body, which has a lot to do with themselves, those who received an astral body would probably tend to be more engaged in leadership positions or gathering people around them or, having a kind of social charisma because, after all, they were carrying the astral body of an individuality who was to create or, be the source of one of the world's very great religions. So they would carry something like this, a devoutness that was not in any way self-engaged and self-involved, but which could really work with others. So let's say they would be the founders of orders in many cases. Something else, I mentioned how the etheric, having the etheric of Jesus would in time, maybe over 14, 21 years and 7 year periods, change a person's appearance because the etheric body works strongly on the outer form of the human being. The astral body tends to work more through the blood and sanguine temperament, a lot of astrality, sangria, we spoke about that already. What happened to the blood of Jesus of Nazareth? Its mission, that blood, was to leave his body and to be absorbed by the earth. And we see this in many depictions of the crucifixion. You see the blood flowing down to the earth, and sometimes below the blood, or the blood is flowing onto one or two skulls and some bones. And this is meant to be the skulls of Adam and Eve, so that this blood is redeeming the fall. It's a lot of rich and mystical lore connected with that blood. So what would happen then to the individual over time, not to everyone, but over the course of time, an individual with an astral body of Jesus would develop the stigmata, so that that individual would start to have blood flowing out of cuts in his hands, which would appear spontaneously, and his feet, and also out of the wound on the side that was caused by the spear of Longinus. And yes, there have been individuals with stigmata. Now, whether all of these stigmata-bearing individuals have been given an astral body of the Jesus being is another question. But certainly in the Middle Ages, those individuals described by Steiner did have this astral body and did have the stigmata, and they were then able to do without regular food. Often they could be nourished simply by taking the host at Mass, and sometimes not even daily, just once a week or something like that. And they, in turn then, did not carry the memory so strongly of the Christ being, of the Jesus children, but rather carried the emotional, the feeling responses to inhabiting that body, which had less to do with the nativity and the childhood period, but much more to do with the crucifixion and the events leading up to that. So these were individuals who could re-experience that vividly and bring that to others in a very powerful way and help make descriptions of this event more accurate. So that's the second group of saints now who are connected to animals, who have great social capacities, leadership capacities very often, and who more often than not would develop the stigmata, and with this would be able to speak in a very experiential way what went forth, what happened to them at the time of the crucifixion, as though these were their own impressions and their own experiences of it. These higher members were not distributed all at once either. There was a wave of passing down to the earth of the etheric body duplicates, replicas, and that was followed in time by an emphasis on the passing down of the astral body replicas and duplicates. So it didn't just, it wasn't that there were a lot of people all at once carrying etheric bodies and then others walking the earth at the same time carrying astral bodies. First came the etheric bodies, for the most part, followed later by the astral bodies, and followed still later, considerably later, by a few copies of the ego. And these individuals, according to Steiner, were not technically saints. These individuals he called mystics at the dawn of the Renaissance. He actually wrote a book about this, one of his earlier books. And they were individuals whose task was no longer to keep a bridge going, or many bridges, between the spiritual world and the earth in the Dark Ages, but rather now that the saints had already helped to awaken people's consciousness again to perceiving the spiritual world on a new level. Now these ego-bearing individuals, of whom there were only a few, could be pointing towards an entirely new path of self-development. And this was to then serve as the foundation for the Renaissance and entirely new ways that human beings related both to the earth and also to the spiritual world. And indeed, just as the as Aesop and Lao Tzu and Buddha and Confucius and Ezekiel and others had all helped affect the evolutionary step from the sentient soul to the mind soul, so the saints and following them the mystics were to help humanity take the step from the mind soul to the consciousness soul. So this is very powerful, what's going on here. And in a way, we have to realize that, if, for example, when we're teaching Roman history in grade 6, when we talk about the seven kings of Rome, Aesop is on the earth at that time. And when we are talking about the early Christians and the early Middle Ages and the Dark Ages in grade 6, then we have to say these saints were on the earth at that time. And when we're talking about the Renaissance in grade 7, then we could say these mystics carrying the ego of the Christ being were on the earth at this time. So this is very interesting. We bring them to the children, not the mystics, but the saints, in grade 2 in story form, but they're with us practically for the rest of the grade school curriculum. In the next lecture, we will look at some saints, and you see if you can figure out which of these categories they belong to. And we'll look in general in the next lectures all together at which saints might be, you know, really required, that you'd really want to bring them to second graders, and how you then can find your way to sources that will give you other possibilities as well.